This is Amarins. Welcome to episode 13 of my podcast. Now, because a lot of people think the number 13 is unlucky, I thought I would call this episode Lucky, 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 and that's the only reason I did, actually. The music at the beginning, of course, is Kylie Minogue's I Should Be So Lucky, and Kylie is the great Australian gay icon, so it seemed vaguely appropriate for that reason anyway. This is Tuesday, the 29th of May, and the first order of business is I want to extend very happy birthday wishes to Archer from archerradio.com, because the 29th is his birthday. Although, as I'm recording this, it's still Monday in America, so it's technically not his birthday there, but that's that whole future past business I've talked about before. This is a relatively short episode, I think, because I only have a couple items I want to go over, including comments, and that's probably where I'll spend a little bit of time. I also eventually hope to return to having some interviews or what have you, but I frankly, with everything that's been going on, I just haven't had time to arrange it. And it is a little bit of a mission sometimes, especially if I'm talking with people in the U.S. because of the time zone differences and the fact that now I have 2 days less a week available for it. It is a little bit harder to arrange these things than it used to be. But nevertheless, I hope to get back to doing that. Now, one of the first things I wanted to talk about is just a little bit of oddity to me. It's maybe even a bit meta, and if you're not interested, I apologize in advance. But the other day, I was logging onto Podomatic, and my podcast was listed among the most active. And I have absolutely no idea why, but there you have it. It was up there, which actually kind of stroked my ego, I have to admit. So yesterday and today, for different reasons, I was on iTunes, and I went to the podcast section, and both in the U.S. store and the New Zealand store, my podcast was listed in the new and notable section. And again, I have no idea why. It struck my ego and all that, but I don't know if there's any particular reason or if it's just random or if it was reading by IP address and thought, oh, we'll put that one up because that's his. I don't know what the story is, but there you have it. But it actually brings up something I've wanted to mention for a while. Podcasters, including me, love it when people leave reviews of their podcasts on iTunes. And in order to do that, you have to be registered with iTunes first, because they don't accept anonymous reviews anymore. But what I didn't realize until recently is that the iTunes comments are relevant only to that country's iTunes store. So if you live in the U.S., you can only leave comments in the U.S. store. Here in New Zealand, we can only leave it in the New Zealand store. So it means that in New Zealand, I have absolutely no reviews of my podcast, and I would imagine that most people don't, but most podcasters don't. But if you are registered with iTunes and you would be so kind, regardless of what country you live in, I'd certainly appreciate it if you'd leave a review. I think it would be cool to see reviews of my podcast in countries around the world, even if I don't speak the same language. But yeah, so if you're so inclined to do that, I'd certainly appreciate that. And kind of related to iTunes, this isn't meta anymore, the New Zealand music charts from this week are going to be including legal downloads. Now, of course, that's been going on in other countries for quite some time, but this is brand new to New Zealand. And what changed was the increasing number of legal downloads. iTunes Store opened in New Zealand a few months back, and that started to change everything. Now it's to the point where there are 4,000 CD singles bought in a typical week and 40,000, 10 times more, digital downloads of songs. Now, of course, this is going to change our charts completely, as it has in other countries, because if people download individual tracks, they might theoretically end up suddenly being charted singles again. So they're changing the whole top 40 chart. The top 40 chart will record all sales, whether they're digital or actual discs or what have you. But they're also introducing a new top 10 chart for radio play only. And that's because The rule for the old top 40 included airplay as well as sales. Well, because of the digital downloads, it's going to dilute the influence of radio, and they want to be able to track what people listen to on the radio because it's still important to many people. Obviously, you listen to it at work or in the car, what have you. So the new top 10 chart for New Zealand radio airplay will only chart songs that are available for sale somewhere, either digitally or actually or what have you. Now, it has been pointed out that this could potentially be a boon for New Zealand music because large numbers of unsigned or independent bands or singers or what have you might theoretically have a chance of being charted, and that can only be good overall for music. There was a report on the CBS Evening News tonight that was talking about the decline of interest among artists in traditional record labels, and there actually are quite a few who still can't do that for a variety of reasons. But I mean, a typical record label in the U.S. gives an artist or band $1 for every disc sold, and if the band hires their own marketing company, hires their own CD manufacturer, and so on, they could easily make $6 or more per CD. So obviously there's a strong incentive, especially in the era of digital downloads, to move away from traditional record labels. So it'll be interesting to see where that all leads in the future. But I always have a link to the New Zealand charts on my blog, and I'll try to remember to put a link to the charts in the show notes. I checked a while ago, and the charts were not yet available, so I don't know what difference there's going to be. But so that's a little bit of excitement here in little old New Zealand. Now, there was an article in the news, it was last week one day, and it was about the New Zealand accent. Now, this obviously has nothing to do with whether or not I have an accent. This is just about the New Zealand accent as such. And the gist of it is that some researchers have been looking into the New Zealand accent, and they found that despite globalization, the New Zealand accent is becoming stronger and more distinct. The assumption had always been that it would become more American or more Australian, and that just hasn't been happening. But what's interesting is if you go back, say, to the late 70s, apparently, and I wasn't here, obviously, but from the recordings I've heard or seen, the official New Zealand accent, which is to say what was used in the news and radio announcers and those sorts of things, sounded very British, very, very plummy British. But by the 80s, the New Zealand accent itself was starting to get in there, partly because the David Lange government was very Kiwi and really instilled a lot of pride in New Zealanders for being New Zealanders. So the New Zealand accent, they say, the researcher is Dr. Alan Bell of Auckland University of Technology. And he came up with this by looking at a whole bunch of recordings, stretching back many years apparently, to trace the changes in the accent. But he said that, I'll just read directly from the article. He said, New Zealanders had, for example, made a huge shift in the way they pronounced the vowel sounds in words like fish and chips and bed, which had over time become more like fush and chops and bid. But the changes were subconscious, said Dr. Bell, and this is quoting him directly now. It's very hard to change, particularly vowels, consciously. You just kind of pick them up. You can use words consciously, but actually trying to do a particular pronunciation is, by and large, quite difficult. Which actually reinforces what I was saying about my own accent, that it's something you just sort of pick up, but it is difficult to deliberately choose to say something in a different way. So, I just thought that was kind of interesting and related to what I've talked about before, the way that the New Zealand accent is slowly changing into one that's more distinct than perhaps any of us had actually thought it would be. Nobody knows where the accent is headed, but I can tell you that one of the most distinctive characteristics of common speech is it's called the rising terminal. I can't remember, but it's when people raise the inflection toward the end of a sentence so it sounds like a question. So, for example, when they're talking to people, they'll start raising their voice, so it sounds a bit like they're asking a question, stuff like that. It's especially noticeable among young people, but you hear some older people doing it as well. Then when you add things like fush and chops and going to bid and whatnot, it starts to become confusing even for somebody who's been here for a while like me. So I just wanted to share those little bits. And now I'm going to go right into the comments from last Friday's episode, episode 12. This boy El Rey said, "Where on earth have you encountered ridicule when your pet died? I've never been in any environment where that would happen. I think I'm going to split up my responses because it is different thoughts. So what I said in response was, I haven't personally experienced ridicule, but I've seen it. And at the same place that I'm working at part-time now, there's a fair bit of sexism too, because men can't grieve for pets and women can. And I wanted to expand on that a little bit, because it is true that no one has ever made fun of me personally for the loss of a pet in that I can remember ever. But I have been in environments where the subtle social cues that you get made it clear that it wasn't the sort of thing you wanted to bring up. It was best just not to bring it up. And it had to do with the dynamics of that particular work culture. And in some cases, this is going back quite a while now. But we lost our first dog when I was working at the same place. I was there full-time, of course. And I hadn't been there that long, I will admit. And there also have been other things going on with the woman who made up all sorts of crazy stories. So there was an inherent suspicion built in. But nevertheless, there were some people there who were extremely unsympathetic about what other people were going through in their lives. And if somebody encountered a difficulty, their attitude was toughen up and, you shouldn't experience these sorts of things. You should just ignore them or whatever. I don't know what they were trying to say. But I had noticed as well that they were more sympathetic toward women than they would be toward men. And some of that is old-fashioned macho attitudes about men are supposed to be stiff upper lip and not have emotions and all that sort of stuff. But mostly it's just that these two guys in particular were jerks. There's just no other way to put it. And I've worked out immediately with our other dog that it was best not to discuss it at all. So what I did is one of my close friends worked in the same department, and I pulled her aside, told her what happened. She was very sympathetic and said, look, I'm not going to be here tomorrow, but I can't let them know why. I'm just going to call in sick. And I told her a few things I was working on that would need to be done that I couldn't just hand over to her without people knowing that something was up in advance. So that's what I did. The next day, I just called in sick. This time, however, of course, everything happened when I wasn't working, so none of that would have been an issue, although I wouldn't have hesitated to call in if it had been different. And but I haven't mentioned it to any of them there, and I don't expect that I will. But it's not so much because I'm worried about being ridiculed or whatever, although if they did it, they do it behind my back, not to my face. The real reason is I just don't care about them, and I don't feel like sharing any part of my life with them. So, I mean, it's not that I'm trying to protect myself so much as I'm just not engaging, which is why I spend a huge amount of my time at that job with my iPod on, the little earbuds, tuning them out. So I don't even get drawn into the gossip anymore, except that actually was one of the most negative things about working there when I was there 4 years ago, was all the gossip that went on. And I would get sucked in, and I'd be drawn into all the negativity and the conspiracy theories, and they haven't changed in all these years. They haven't changed. So I've just decided I'm just not going to engage. I'm just going to go there, do what I'm paid to do, and go home and basically leave it at that. I mean, I'm friendly. Don't get me wrong. It's not like I'm sitting there and being deliberately shunning them and all that sort of stuff. It's just that when I'm doing my work, I just try to focus on that and then tune out everything that's going on around me, because it's better that way. And this is only temporary anyway. I'm not there to make any friends. I'm not there to perpetuate any friendships even. So as far as I'm concerned, it's just a way of filling time. And this also allows me to keep up with podcasts or catch up with podcasts, because I'd gotten so far behind. I'm still far behind, but I'm slowly working through it. Anyway, back to Adam. He said about the parliamentary systems. I remember when I was in college and mindlessly skipping through channels one day in my dorm room and happened upon C-SPAN coverage of the Prime Minister's questions. That was the day I fell in love with the parliamentary system of government. It was so clear to me that in the parliamentary system, the policies enacted by the legislature are more in step with the general public opinion and are not as skewed by wingnut outliers. In speaking with many of my international colleagues, they seem to think that our system has one great advantage, local representation in the federal government. I go on to explain to them that actually it may sound good on paper, but in reality gerrymandering perpetuates the class, race, and religious stratification, which is why there is a conservative majority in Congress today. And I said, I said, I completely agree with you about parliamentary systems, though question time is a largely choreographed point scoring. Actually, I found out recently that New Zealand's question time is available on a podcast, though that's a bit much even for me. I haven't even downloaded one to see what it's about. I don't know if it's video or just audio. But Question Time, if you haven't seen it on C-SPAN or elsewhere, Question Time is where it's a sitting of the usually the lower house of parliament, although New Zealand only has one house, so whatever. House of Commons in Britain, the House of Representatives in New Zealand. I think I've forgotten what it's called in Australia. Oh, that's terrible of me. Anyway, it essentially what it is it allows the members of parliament to ask the prime minister and the other ministers questions pertaining to what the government is doing. What it's usually used for, I said political point scoring, and it is, because the opposition tries to bring up things that they think will embarrass the government, and the government also has questions asked which flatter the government or give them the opportunity to say something flattering about the government or to tear down the opposition, as the case may be. So it's a lot of nonsense, really, because it doesn't really mean anything, and they don't really, generally speaking, answer any questions. Nobody's blindsided, because the questions are all submitted in advance so that the ministers or prime minister can answer them. So everybody knows what questions are coming, and it's just a question of how effectively they'll answer it. Now, in all the question times that I've seen, the two sides will end up shouting at each other and sometimes swearing at each other. And one MP had to apologize recently for flipping the bird at somebody who was saying something stupid. It can be entertaining in the same way that a circus is, or maybe more in the same way that a train derailing can be. It's a lot of fire and not much illumination, you could say. The question time in the British House of Commons is usually broadcast on BBC America, if that's available to you, and BBC Worldwide, BBC World has some excerpts, but I don't think they broadcast the whole thing. Here in New Zealand, we have Sky News, which is actually Australian, and that's actually just related to B-Sky B in Britain. And they broadcast New Zealand Question Time and also Australian Question Time when the parliaments are sitting. So we get to see plenty of it. And as I say, there is a podcast of the New Zealand one, although I haven't looked into it at all. But to go on to the comments, to my answer, I said, you are so right about the local representation thing, especially that it's not as strong in America as it looks on paper. It's also not quite as weak in a parliamentary system as it looks. And what I was talking about, and I think what Adam was talking about a bit, was that in the American system, the local member of Congress is elected to represent a specific district. And for that matter, a senator is elected to represent a state. And on the face of it, it looks like that's a really strong system because the local people can have a say. In practice, it doesn't usually work out that way because the person may represent the local constituency, and on the plus side, it could make them more responsive to them, but what usually happens is they end up representing only the most vocal most vocal groups in that electorate, and who are not necessarily the largest group, they're just the loudest. It can lead a congressperson in particular to pursue parochial interests, going after government pork barrel spending for a road or something, rather than doing what's best, the best interests of the country generally, or even of their constituents generally. So it's a bit overrated, this local representation thing. It's often been said, thought, I should say, that in a parliamentary system, a member of parliament, say of a House of Commons or what have you, isn't representing their constituents, because whenever a vote is held in parliament, they almost always are required to vote as the party tells them to vote. They don't have a whole lot of freedom, whereas obviously a member of Congress does. But you have to consider why they're in parliament in the first place. They're not actually there to represent the local electorate by and large. They're there to advance the cause of the party, because you're voting to put a party into government, not just to have a local representative. So it's a bit like if, in American terms, when people vote for a Democrat or Republican for Congress, they know exactly how that person is going to vote on every issue. And of course, the way the American system is, you can elect a Republican who votes like a Democrat and a Democrat who votes like a Republican. You have no guarantee how they're going to vote just because of their party label. In parliamentary countries, generally speaking, you do. If you vote, here in New Zealand, for example, if you vote for a Labour politician, you're pretty clear that on nearly every issue they're going to vote as the Labour Party tells them to. If you vote for a National Party person, they'll vote as the National Party tells them to do. So there aren't any surprises. Now, there are, the only exception to that is what they usually call conscience votes or sometimes free votes, and that's they can vote however they want. So, for example, the current leader of the National Party, John Key, voted against the Civil Union Bill, which was a conscience vote, because he said that's what his constituents would want. He may or may not be right about that. I'm suspicious about it. And it's one of the things that makes me suspicious of him personally as leader of that party, that he may not be as friendly and centrist as he's trying to portray himself as being. But we'll see. But the point there really is that the intent in a parliamentary system is you vote for a member of parliament who will represent your general interests in parliament, so you know how they're going to vote when it comes down to an issue. Now, just as an aside, Adam talked about gerrymandering. And here's a little fun fact to know and tell. Gerrymandering gets its name from Elbridge Gerry, G-E-R-R-Y, who was the governor of Massachusetts, must have been shortly after the Revolution. At any rate, his name is what gave rise to the term, and it's properly pronounced gerrymandering, although nobody does anymore. Everybody says gerrymandering. And it's derived from his name, Gary, and Mander from Salamander, as you probably know. But yeah, it's just a little fun fact to know and tell that the word is properly pronounced gerrymandering and is derived from Elbridge Gerry, the former governor of Massachusetts. So there you go. Moving on, Lost in France said, I'm glad to hear that you're doing better now. And we are. I haven't talked about this, obviously, but things are going much better. And which actually sort of segues into Archer's comment. The first thing he says is so glad to hear you're beginning to move on. It's very hard to deal with, but at some point you do move on. Sounds like you're doing just that. And yeah, to both of you, thanks to both of you. But things are getting easier. I mean, obviously, we're, 10-odd days past the events now. And we're just sort of adjusting. We're still trying to get the cat used to coming in. He still thinks that the dog's going to run and chase him, which isn't going to happen, obviously. And he's still a bit reluctant to learn, but we've made adjustments. We took down the last of the baby gates we had up. We had one across the master bedroom door because that was the cat's refuge. We wanted one place in the house where the cat could go and not be harassed by the dog. And the cat's food is actually in the ensuite for that reason as well. Ensuite is usually called master bathroom in America. Anyway, so we took that gate down, and the cat has adjusted to that. But actually, I think he's probably having more difficult time adjusting than we are, to be honest. But there you go. Archer goes on, I can't imagine people making fun about your dog. I think most people who don't have children, who do have pets, treat their pets like the children. My sister is the same way with her animals. And I said that I agree that most, or at least many people, treat their pets like children, and that may be why we feel their loss so keenly. As I said earlier, we never treated our dog like a human. We were keenly aware that she was a dog, but we did baby her, and sometimes we did treat her more like a child, probably, than a distinct animal. But, you know, you think human beings and dogs have been living together for 40-odd thousand years. It's almost inevitable that we would develop a sort of a connection there that we don't have with other creatures, whether you're talking about cows or you're talking about rhododendron or whatever you want to talk about. There is a special connection between humans and dogs, and even humans and cats, that is really pretty inexplicable when you look at it just from the sake of pure logic or whatever. But Archer says, I don't know much about the parliamentary system, but it does sound much stronger than what we currently have going on in the U.S. Actually, anything is better than what we are dealing with Bush. And I said, one main advantage of a parliamentary system is that Bush would be long gone if America had such a system. And that is one of the major benefits of a parliamentary system. You don't get stuck with somebody who's so wrong and so out of step for very long, because either the party will lose a confidence vote, or more and more likely, that politician's party in parliament will overthrow them. It sounds like military. It will, remove them and replace them with somebody else. So those are all of the comments for the last episode, and that's pretty much all I wanted to talk about this week. As always, please leave a comment on my blog, amarins.blogspot.com, or you can send me an email to amarins@yahoo.com. And that's all for this episode. I'm hoping to have another one on Friday, but be warned, I may not be able to do it. Sister-in-law is moving into a new house on this week, and the whole family's going to be around, and I'm not quite sure when I'm going to have the opportunity to record between now and Friday. So if I don't have one on Friday, I'm sorry, and I will see you again on Tuesday. But at this stage, I hope to talk to you again on Friday. So that's all for this Tuesday edition. Thank you, everybody. Talk to you later. Bye.
Hi, this is Matt Blender from OK So Radio. Right now I'm participating in the AIDS Chicago Marathon Training Program and I need your help. On my website, oksoradio.libsyn.com, you will find a link to my online donation page. Your generous contributions will go towards AIDS Foundation of Chicago, which is an organization that provides direct medical care to people with HIV. Running the Chicago Marathon will be the hardest physical challenge I've ever faced, but it will be nothing compared to the challenge that those living with HIV and AIDS face every day. This is a great way to help in the fight to end AIDS. Thank you so much for your support.